Welcome into the Poetry Tavern, a place to discuss both reading and writing poetry, spotlighting new poems and ideas every week. Okay. Hello everyone and welcome into the Poetry Tavern. This week we're going to be talking about acrostic poems. I feel like my experience with acrostic poems has been very limited. I mean, like, you get introduced to them at school, and they teach you this very simple version of the acrostic, where it's like, you put the word down the side and then you try and write it, and all the lines don't necessarily have to connect. But I think that by looking at it simply as, like, this simple poem that kids create, it limits our perspective on what can be more complicated poetry using this form. The acrostic style that we're used to, the one that they teach us how to do, is just known as acrostic. There are other styles wherein it's structured differently that have their own names. For example, the telestitch, I might be saying that wrong, is a style of acrostic in which the last letters of each line spell a word or a message. I've seen this a lot done, not necessarily in like poetry, but in puzzle making. And the use of acrostic in puzzles is always really fun, because you think you're looking at, like, oh, it's just a poster, and then you look at the first letter and it spells something, and it's really fun on use of a poetic device in a different form. But you can also have it in the back end, which is a telestitch. Mesostitch, I think is how you say it, which is where the letters that you take to form the message come from the middle of the words or the middle of the lines. Not necessarily directly in the middle, but, like, not from the front or back is basically what's meaning. And the double acrostic, which is when it's from the first letter and the last letter. It's really it's really interesting that, like, this is a different way of, it's a combination of the basic acrostic and the telestitch, but it has its own name because obviously it is a fair bit different. Like, how you read the message is different, like, do you start, but it's all dependent on the poet's choice, how the poet chooses to craft it, and in the end it's also dependent on how the audience reads it. There's even a type of acrostic, this is really fun, it's just so fun and wild, the Abacadarian, which sounds like magic, but it kind of is, which is an acrostic that instead of spelling a word, like, you do the alphabet, which is really fun. Like, there's just something kind of magic about that. So the name probably is supposed to be, like, ABC, Abaca, Darian. Oh, I guess the D's in there as well. But it just feels like abracadabra. I'm whittling on. I'm just going to get into my poetry. The poetry that I've picked to talk about. I've picked two poems this week. One is your basic acrostic, and the other is, I believe, a mesostitch, where it's in the middle. So let's get on to talking about those. When I was looking into different acrostic poems, because I'm going to be honest, there isn't a lot that I know about the style. Mostly because I just hadn't come across many in my reading or anything like that. When I was researching acrostic poems, one of the common things I noticed is that they're often dedicated to people, if not ideas. And that's especially true for the two poems that I'm going to talk about today. Firstly, I had to go with this one because it's literally called acrostic, and who would I be if I knew there was a poem out there with literally that title and I didn't pick at least one, because there was at least three that I found titled acrostic, and I just sort of picked my favourite of the bunch. Well, I picked the one that had my favourite story surrounding it. So here we go, Lewis Carroll's acrostic. Little maidens, when you look on this little storybook, reading with attentive eye its enticing history, never think that hours of play are your only holiday, and the inner house of joy lessons serve but to annoy. If in any house you find children of a gentle mind, each the other's pleasing ever, each the other's vexing never, daily work and pastime daily, in their order taking gaily, then be very sure that they have a life of holiday. Now, what's so fun about this is that Lewis Carroll wrote this poem and put it inside a copy of Catherine Sinclair's Holiday House, which is a story about these two siblings and their, I suppose, misadventures after losing their parents from the 19th century, I believe. But he wrote this poem and slipped it in this book, and he gave it as a gift, Christmas gift, to his three sisters. Now, if you pay attention to the first letter of each line, you'll find the names Lorena, Alice, and Edith, which are the names of his three sisters. So he gifted them this book, and inside he gifted them this poem dedicated to the three of them. It's really fun because you can sort of, like, imagine them finding it in this book. And maybe, I mean, I wasn't certain where to cut it. I mean, Lorena's not a super common name anymore. And I was like, is that a name? Am I imagining it? But you can sort of feel the love emanating from this poem. And maybe, like, maybe that's the point of dedicating a poem to someone, like, in this way, where it's, like, you name them, is you're sharing your affection with them in a way that's clear that it's about them. And it's a really interesting, I mean, there's some lines where I'm like, this was clearly put in so that the name could fit. I think if I ever called my sister a little maiden, she'd be mad at me. But yeah, I think it's lovely and sweet, and I don't know how else to explain or describe. Yeah, it's a really interesting way of allowing the poet to name the person that the poem is dedicated to in using the acrostic style. So it's not like it changes the fundamental narrative that the poem is telling, or the essence. And I like a lot of the acrostic poems you write as a kid, this one flows into each other, like it makes sense for each line to come after the other in the structure of it. This next poem is another poem dedicated to a person. Well, I suppose the last poem was dedicated to three people, but it's another poem dedicated to people. It's dedicated to a singular person. It's a Valentine by Edgar Allan Poe. For her this rhyme is penned, whose luminous eyes, brightly expressive as the twins of Loredo, shall find her own sweet name, that nestling lies upon the page, enwrapped from every reader, such narrowly the lines, they hold a treasure, divine, a talisman, an amulet, that must be worn at heart, search well the measure, the words, the syllables, do not forget the trivialest point, or you may lose your labour. And yet there is no Gordian knot, which one might not undo without a sabre, if one could merely comprehend the plot, and written upon the leaf were now appearing. Eyes scintillating soul, their lyre perdus, three eloquent words oft uttered in the hearing, of poets by poets, as the name is a poet's too. Its letters, although naturally lying, like the knight Pinto, Mendez Ferdinando, still form a synonym for truth. Cease trying. You will not read the riddle, though you do the best you can do. Now, when I first came across this poem on a list of acrostic poems that I was reading through, I read it and I was like, where is the acrostic? Like, I tried the first letter, I tried the last letter, and I was a little bit befuddled by it. And then I read that you're supposed to take the first word, first letter from the first line, second letter from the second line, and so on and so forth throughout the poem, and it gives you the name that the poem talks about, because obviously the poem isn't itself talking about a name hidden within the lines of the poem of someone who clearly Poe cared deeply for, had great amount of feeling for. He even states within the poem that the name of the poet, the name of the person is a poet. The person he's talking about in the poem is a poet, because he literally says, as the name is a poet too. And so it's very much supposed to be this clever little ruse of hiding the name of his supposed, you know, lover within the lines of this poem. And if you take the letters as first from the first line, second from the second line, and so on and so forth, you find the name Francis Sargent Osgood, who was a fellow poet at the time, who Poe reportedly had an affair with. I mean, I'm not Poe or Osgood, so I cannot tell you the validity of such a statement, but, you know, it's really interesting that he purposely wrote a poem that's like, here's a fun little trick I'm playing, and there's a name of someone I care about in here, and like, he describes her in this really poetic way while still being like, her name is hidden within. Here's all the little clues, like... Yeah, I just... When I read this one, read what the trick was to finding the name, of, like, discovering what the acrostic element of this poem was, I sort of felt like it was so... unapologetically whimsical is the phrase that's coming to mind, but I'm not sure if that's correct. But yeah, it has this level of like trickster energy, not only in the placement of the acrostic and the placement of her name, but in the way the poem sort of taunts you with the fact that it's in there and you have to try and dig it up and find it. Obviously it's been found now, or maybe he talked about it. But, like, imagine coming across this poem and you haven't got access to the internet and you're just like, there's a name in here? There's... It's fun. It's... Yeah, it brings me a chuckle. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this week's episode. I really enjoyed digging into acrostics because I do think I haven't had much exposure to them in the form of, like, I don't want to say serious poetry, but like stuff done by poets and not done by kids or teachers trying to set examples. I think it's fun. I keep saying the word fun. It's really interesting to see these forms that we're taught as children being used to talk about. No, not just to talk about, but by people who, you know, are, I mean, not to dump on children's poetry, but, like, Lewis Carroll and Edgar Allan Poe are pretty big names, and to see them be using these forms, even if Poe was using the acrostic as if he was a trickster spirit from the Fae dimension. But yeah, it's been really fun looking into it and sort of seeing what's out there beyond just the kind of things they teach kids to do, to see them flow in the way that I think a lot of, you know, acrostic poems I was shown as a kid didn't. It didn't feel like each line was its own separate thing, and it was only brought together by the fact that it made these words when you list them. So thank you for listening to me ramble. We'll see you next week. Bye. next week on the Poetry Tavern, we'll be talking about haikus.